This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy.
Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them, and guess what? That's normal. Regain offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online.
Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both.
See why people wish they'd try couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
Story 1. Working the overnight shift in a nursing home can do strange things to your mind. Most of the time, it's peaceful. The residents sleep, the halls stay quiet except for the occasional creak of the old building or the soft hum of medical monitors. It's dark, so dark that the little nightlights over the beds feel like stars in an otherwise black sky. I don't scare easily. Years of working in shadowy, quiet places have conditioned me to dismiss anything that seems out of place. At least they used to. It happened on one of those long, uneventful nights when you're too tired to think, but still have to keep going. I had a tiny patient in my care, probably no more than 80 pounds soaking wet, her frame curled up in a perpetual fetal position due to contractures. She never spoke, never moved much on her own. She just lay there, fragile as a bird, in her room at the end of the hall. I had given her meds countless times before, and while her silence was unsettling at first, I'd gotten used to it. That night, though, something felt different. Maybe it was the extra stillness in the air, or the way the light from her nightlight seemed dimmer than usual, casting longer shadows across the room. I couldn't put my finger on it, but walking into her room made my skin crawl, just for a second. I shook it off. You can't let your imagination take over in a job like this, or you'll never get through a shift. When I walked in, she was facing the wall, her tiny body curled into herself as always. The faint yellow glow of the nightlight barely illuminated her outline. "Hey," I said softly, more to announce my presence than anything else. No response, of course. She rarely reacted to anything. I stepped closer, leaning over her to gently touch her shoulder and wake her. That's when it happened. As I leaned over, my body blocked part of the light, casting her face into shadow. Her eyes, those wide, sunken eyes, snapped open and locked onto mine. I froze, the room suddenly feeling like it had dropped 10 degrees. For a moment, we just stared at each other, her gaze sharp and intense in a way I'd never seen before. Then in the smallest, faintest whisper, she said a single word, "Die." My stomach flipped. It wasn't just the word. It was the way she said it, drawn out and breathy, like a cold wind seeping into your bones. My hand stopped midair, inches from her shoulder. I couldn't move, couldn't think. I just stood there staring at this tiny, motionless woman who had suddenly come alive in the most horrifying way. Before I could react, she whispered again, her voice low and rasping, "Murder." The words slithered out of her mouth like smoke, curling around me and squeezing the air from my lungs. It didn't feel like a random utterance. It felt deliberate, purposeful, like she was telling me something I wasn't supposed to hear. Every instinct in my body screamed at me to leave. I didn't touch her, didn't say another word. I just backed out of the room, my hands shaking, my heart pounding so hard I could hear it in my ears. As soon as I was out in the hallway, I took a deep breath, trying to steady myself, but the sound of her voice was still ringing in my head. I didn't go back into her room that night. I couldn't. She didn't get her meds until the morning, when she was up and sitting in the brightly lit dining room with the other residents, her expression blank and unreadable as always. I didn't tell anyone what had happened. I couldn't imagine how to explain it without sounding ridiculous. But I avoided her room as much as possible after that. I don't know what it meant, if it meant anything at all. But I'll never forget the feeling it gave me. The kind of fear that doesn't let go, that lingers in the corners of your mind long after the moment has passed. I'm not superstitious. I don't believe in ghosts or omens or the supernatural. But that night, alone in that dark, shadowy room, I felt something I can't explain, and I hope I never feel it again. Story 2. I used to work the night shift on a mental health unit, the kind of job where the quiet hours could stretch endlessly, but you always knew something could happen at any moment. Every hour we'd do rounds, checking on patients to make sure they were breathing, not self-harming, and generally safe. It was routine, but the darkness added a layer of tension that never fully went away. We used flashlights to avoid waking anyone up, the beams cutting through the shadows like fragile threads. Most nights were uneventful, but one night everything changed. It started like any other shift. The halls were dim, the air heavy with the quiet hum of the building. I was at the nurse's station, finishing up some paperwork, while my colleague Sarah went to do the hourly checks. She was experienced, calm under pressure, and we'd worked together long enough that I trusted her completely. I barely glanced up as she grabbed her flashlight and headed down the corridor. The unit was small, just a handful of rooms lining each side of the hallway. Most of the patients were asleep, their doors cracked open just enough for us to peek in without disturbing them. Sarah moved methodically, her footsteps soft against the linoleum. I could hear her faintly as she checked each room, the occasional creak of a door, or the muffled sound of her flashlight clicking on and off. Then came the scream. It was sharp, piercing, and so sudden that I dropped my pen. For a split second, I froze, my brain struggling to process what I just heard. Then instinct kicked in, and I bolted down the hallway toward the sound. My heart was pounding, adrenaline surging as I rounded the corner and saw Sarah's flashlight beam flickering wildly. She was on the floor, struggling beneath a small figure, a patient. It was one of our female schizophrenic patients, a petite woman who barely weighed 100 pounds soaking wet. But in that moment, she seemed impossibly strong, her movements frantic and unpredictable. Sarah was trying to push her off, her face pale and contorted with fear. I didn't think. I just acted. I grabbed the patient's arms, pulling her back as gently but firmly as I could. She resisted, her body twisting and jerking, her eyes wide and wild. She wasn't screaming, but her breathing was ragged, almost animalistic. It took both of us to restrain her, Sarah and I working together to calm her down without hurting her. Eventually, she stopped fighting, her body going limp as she stared blankly at the wall. Once she was stable, we helped her back to her bed, making sure she was safe and secure before stepping out into the hallway. Sarah was shaking, her hands trembling as she leaned against the wall. "What happened?" I asked, my voice low and steady, trying to keep her calm. She took a deep breath, her eyes darting toward the patient's room. "I couldn't see her," she said, her voice barely above a whisper. "She wasn't on the bed. I thought maybe she'd fallen or was hiding under the blankets. But when I shined the flashlight, she was against the wall. And then she just charged at me." I felt a chill run down my spine. The image of that small, silent figure lurking in the shadows, waiting, was enough to make my stomach turn. I glanced back at the room, the door now closed, and couldn't shake the feeling that something was still watching us. The rest of the night was tense. We kept a close eye on the patient, making sure she was calm and stable, but neither of us could fully relax. The darkness felt heavier, the shadows deeper, and every sound seemed amplified. Even after the shift ended and I went home, the memory of that moment stayed with me. The scream, the struggle, the way she had been waiting in the corner, hidden in the dark. I've worked plenty of night shifts since then, but that night stands out as one of the most unsettling experiences of my career. It wasn't just the attack. It was the way the darkness seemed to come alive, the way the routine of our rounds suddenly turned into something unpredictable and terrifying. It reminded me that in this line of work, you can never truly know what's waiting for you in the shadows, and sometimes it's better not to find out. Story 3. Halloween always made the nursing home feel different. The decorations were cheerful enough, paper pumpkins taped to the walls, plastic skeletons dangling from the ceiling. But there was something about the season that seemed to stir the air, like the building itself was holding its breath. I'd been working there for years and I'd seen my share of strange things, but nothing prepared me for that night. I was on the evening shift, making my rounds as usual. The halls were quiet, the faint hum of fluorescent lights overhead blending with the occasional creak of the old building. Most of the residents were settled in their rooms, either asleep or watching TV. I liked the quiet. It gave me time to think, to breathe, but as I approached one particular room, I felt a familiar unease creeping up my spine. She was one of our long-term patients, a woman in her late 60s with a history of severe mental illness. She was small, frail, and spent most of her days talking to herself in three distinct voices. Her normal voice was soft and timid, barely audible most of the time. Then there was her father's voice, deep, commanding, almost angry. And finally, the baby's voice, high-pitched pleading, like a child begging for attention. It was unsettling, but I'd grown used to it. Most of the time, her chatter was harmless, just fragments of conversations that didn't make sense. That night, though, was different.
If you're running a retail business, don't let disorganized order fulfillment cause chaos. Use ShipStation instead. From running a business out of your garage to multiple warehouses, ShipStation is ideal for every phase of your growth. Save time with one login for all your stores and by automating tasks, plus you'll get the best shipping rates from global carriers. Calm the chaos with the shipping software that delivers. Start a free trial at ShipStation.com/audio. That's ShipStation.com/audio.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair has got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Message and data rates may apply. Consult a doctor prior to use.
Wow, you look amazing. What have you been doing?
I'm sure you've heard of Ozempic, Wegovy, and the other GLP-1 medications, right? Well, I found this great company called Zelthy. If you qualify, their providers can prescribe medications like Ozempic and Wegovy and other GLP-1 medications that are 80 to 90% less expensive, all 100% online.
I can get GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% less and do it all online? No doctor's office or pharmacy?
Yes, Zelthy can provide semaglutide or tirzepatide, the active ingredients in Ozempic and other expensive GLP-1s. But for 80 to 90% less and ship directly to your door.
How do I get started with Zelthy?
Call #250 with the word care to get started today with Zelthy. Get the same active ingredients in Wegovy or Ozempic, but for 80 to 90% less and 100% online. Don't wait. Call #250 with the word care right now for a link to your exclusive offer. Call #250 with the word care. That's #250 with the word care. #250 and care.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
I knocked lightly on her door before stepping inside. She was sitting in her usual spot by the window, her thin frame hunched over, her hands clasped tightly in her lap. The room was dim, the glow of the streetlights outside casting long shadows across the walls. She didn't look up as I entered, her gaze fixed on something I couldn't see. "Hey," I said softly, trying to sound cheerful. "Just checking in. How are you feeling tonight?" She didn't respond, Her lips moved, but no sound came out. I stepped closer, my heart sinking as I realized she was talking in her father's voice. It was low and guttural, the words sharp and deliberate. "Give me the baby," she said, her tone cold and commanding. "I'll take care of it." I froze, the air in the room suddenly feeling heavier. "What baby?" I asked, trying to keep my voice steady. Her head tilted slightly, her eyes narrowing as she continued. "Give it to me," she repeated. "I'll kill it. It's better this way." Before I could respond, her voice shifted. It was the baby now, high-pitched, trembling, and filled with fear. "Please don't," she whimpered, tears streaming down her face. "Please don't kill me." I felt my stomach twist, my pulse quickening as I watched her. She wasn't just talking. She was crying, her shoulders shaking with each sob. It was like she was trapped in some twisted dialogue, playing both roles in a scene I couldn't understand. The baby's voice begged and pleaded, while her father's voice grew louder, more insistent. "Give it to me," he demanded. "Now!" I didn't know what to do. My training told me to stay calm, to keep her safe, but my instincts were screaming at me to leave. The room felt colder, the shadows darker, and the sound of her voices filled every corner, echoing in my head. I wanted to reach out to comfort her, but I couldn't move. I just stood there, frozen, watching as she cried and begged and commanded herself in a way that felt impossibly real. Finally, I managed to speak. "It's okay," I said, my voice shaking. "You're safe. There's no baby. You're safe." She stopped suddenly, her head snapping up to look at me. Her eyes were wide, her face pale, and for a moment, I thought she was going to say something, but instead she just stared, her lips trembling as she whispered, "He's coming." I didn't wait to find out what she meant. I backed out of the room, my hands shaking as I closed the door behind me. The hallway felt brighter, warmer, but the sound of her voices still echoed in my ears. I leaned against the wall trying to catch my breath, my heart pounding in my chest. I didn't go back into her room that night. I couldn't. Another nurse took over, and I spent the rest of my shift trying to shake the feeling that something was watching me, waiting just out of sight. Halloween hasn't felt the same since. It's not the decorations or the stories. It's the memory of that night, the way the air seemed to shift, the way her voices filled the room with something I can't explain. I don't know what she saw, what she felt, but I know it wasn't just in her head, and I hope I never have to hear it again. Story 4. I didn't think much of it when I was floated to another unit that evening. It was just one of those shifts where you go where you're needed, no questions asked. It was about 7 p.m., the kind of time where the buzz of a busy nursing home starts to fade and the halls settle into quiet. My regular unit had called for me to cover a few hours, and I figured it'd be uneventful. I didn't know this floor well, but nursing's nursing, right? I had no idea that the next few hours would haunt me for years. They handed me the chart for a psych patient, mid-70s, originally moved to a medical floor for dehydration. There wasn't much else listed. Just a note about erratic behavior and possible psychosis. Patients like this weren't unusual for me. I dealt with a fair share of agitation and delusions, so I figured I'd keep an eye on her and get through the shift without too much trouble. The first time I walked into her room, the atmosphere felt strange. The air felt heavy, and I couldn't quite put my finger on why. She was sitting upright in bed, motionless except for her eyes. They were wide open, staring right at me as I entered the room. Not blinking, not wavering, just fixed on me in this way that made my skin crawl. I introduced myself, but she didn't respond. Not with words, anyway. She started laughing. It wasn't a normal laugh, not the kind you hear from someone sharing a joke or reminiscing about something sweet. No, this laugh was deep, raspy, and maniacal. It came from somewhere low and guttural, almost like it didn't belong to her. She kept staring at me, her laughter rising and falling in pitch, filling the room with this hollow, eerie sound that made my hands tighten around the chart. "Are you feeling okay tonight?" I asked, forcing my voice to sound steady. "Nothing." Her gaze didn't break for a second. She mumbled something, her lips barely moving, the words too quiet to make out. I stepped closer, trying to catch what she was saying. She shifted slightly, twisting her neck and shoulders into an unnatural angle. It wasn't subtle. It was jarring, the kind of movement that makes you wonder if someone's bones should even allow that. And then she spoke clearly for the first time, her voice low and chilling. "Get out!" The words hit me harder than I expected, not because they were loud, she didn't scream them at first, but because they came out so sharp, so deliberate, like she wasn't just talking to me. It felt like she was warning me. I stood frozen, staring at her as she went back to mumbling, her laughter bubbling up again. The sound was relentless, a mix of nonsense and chuckles, and I couldn't tell if she was speaking in tongues or if my mind was playing tricks on me. I glanced at her chart again, trying to distract myself. Just dehydration, I reminded myself. It's nothing. But then she screamed, "Get out!" The force of her voice filled the room, cracking through the air like lightning. Her laugh returned just as quickly, and she twisted her neck again, her body moving in ways I'd never seen a human body move. I felt my stomach drop. I wasn't scared of patients. Normally I wasn't. But there was something about her that felt wrong. The way she stared, the way her laugh seemed to echo, even after it stopped. It wasn't just unsettling. It was something else entirely. For the next couple of hours, I tried to avoid her room as much as I could. I still checked in. But each time I did, it was the same. The wide eyes, the raspy laugh, the dark muttering that felt like it was crawling across the walls. Every time I walked in, her gaze locked onto me instantly, tracking my every movement, never blinking. I've had patients follow me with their eyes before. It's normal. But this wasn't normal. It was almost predatory. At one point, I stood near the door, trying to muster the courage to go in again. The laughter had stopped briefly, and I thought maybe she'd finally fallen asleep. I stepped inside cautiously, keeping my flashlight close as I moved toward her. The moment I crossed the threshold, her body twisted again, her neck bending at an angle that made me wince. She laughed louder this time, the sound filling the entire room, and her eyes never left mine. "Get out!" she screamed again, louder than before. I backed out immediately, my heart racing. I could feel her eyes on me even after I stepped into the hallway. I don't know if she could see me through the wall, but it felt like she could, like her stare was following me no matter where I went. When my regular unit finally called me back at 11, I didn't hesitate. I practically sprinted down the hall, grabbed my things, and left without looking back. The weight of the air around her room lifted as soon as I turned the corner, but the memory of her wide eyes, her twisted neck, and that cackling laugh stayed with me for weeks. I don't know what was wrong with her, whether it was psychosis or something deeper, but I can't shake the feeling that there was more going on than dehydration. Something about her felt unnatural, like she wasn't just sick, like she was possessed. I haven't floated to that unit since, and frankly, I hope I never have to. That night reminded me that some things, even in the world of medicine, don't have an easy explanation. And when someone tells you to get out, sometimes it's best to listen. Story 5. I don't talk about this much, not because I'm afraid people won't believe me. Most wouldn't, and I've made peace with that, but because it still messes with my head when I think about it too long. I'm from Nottingham, East Midlands. I used to work nights at a care home on the outskirts of the city. Quiet place, old Victorian building turned residential unit. We looked after adults with long-term psychiatric conditions, people who couldn't live independently, but didn't belong in a hospital either. I was a support worker, not a nurse, but we worked under nurses and had a lot of the same responsibilities at night. It was just me and one nurse on duty after 10 p.m. No security, no cleaner, nothing else. Just us and 24 residents, spread across two floors. There was one resident, Daniil. He was only 25, way younger than everyone else there. Born in Kazakhstan in 89. That matters because he was two when the Soviet Union collapsed. He'd grown up in one of those nightmare orphanages you hear about in documentaries. Starved, beaten, experimented on. When he got adopted by a British couple in the late 90s, his mind was already mangled. Daniil had all sorts of issues. Paranoia, PTSD, night terrors. During the day he was quiet, polite even. Read books, drank tea with too much sugar. But at night, one night last winter, I was on the late shift. It was cold. Place always felt colder than it should have, like the walls breathed in the heat. Around 3 a.m., I was at the nurse's desk catching up on paperwork. All the lights were dimmed, corridors stretching out ahead of me like a tunnel. I had that heavy tiredness, the kind that makes your eyes sting. Then I felt it, like someone watching me. You know that feeling, the pressure at the back of your neck? I looked up. He was standing at the far end of the corridor. Daniil, just standing there, not moving, in the shadows, his eyes locked on me. I gave him the usual. You all right, Daniil? Can't sleep? He didn't reply, just kept staring. Sometimes he did this, stood there silently for minutes, then turned and walked back to his room. So I figured it was one of those nights. I went back to writing, but something felt off. It's hard to explain, but it was like the air changed, got thicker, and I could hear something, a faint scratching, not from Daniil, but from further down the hallway, past where he was, like fingernails dragging against stone. I looked up again. He was closer now, still just standing, dead still, hands at his sides. His mouth was hanging open a little, not wide, just enough to look wrong. His eyes were bulging, like he wasn't blinking. Daniil, I said again, firmer this time. Go back to your room. He didn't move, and then he started whispering. I couldn't hear the words at first. It was like he was speaking in another language. Kazakh, maybe, or Russian. The words were coming out fast and frantic, like a chant. I stood up, heart going fast now. I was about to walk towards him when he jerked, like something yanked him sideways. His whole body snapped left, and he disappeared around the corner at the end of the corridor. I ran after him. I wish I hadn't. When I turned the corner, he wasn't there. The hallway was empty. All the room doors were shut, even his. I stood there, frozen. Then I heard it, the whispering again, but this time it was behind me. I turned, no one. Then it came again, this time louder, right next to my ear. A whisper in that same language, fast, garbled, like static filtered through a human throat. I bolted, ran back to the desk and called the nurse on the upstairs floor, told her to come down now. We did a room check together. Daniil was in bed, fast asleep, or at least pretending. He didn't open his eyes, didn't say a word, just lay there breathing slow like nothing had happened. But the weirdest part? His door had been locked from the inside. That's not something he could have done in the 5 seconds between me seeing him disappear and me getting to his door. No way. And from then on, I couldn't look him in the eyes. Because whatever was in that corridor that night, whatever was speaking through him, it wasn't just trauma, it was something else. I quit that job 2 months later, haven't worked in a care home since, and I never work nights anymore. Story 6. I'm a night shift nurse in a small town just outside of Pittsburgh. Been in the field for 12 years now, long enough to know when something's off. This happened when I was covering a few night shifts at an old state psych hospital turned long-term care facility. It was over 100 years old, half abandoned, and barely holding together in places. They stuck me on Unit B, which was mostly dementia patients. Unit D down the hall had been closed for years. It had flooded back in the late 80s and never reopened. We were told not to even go down there. Black mold, unstable floors, asbestos, all of it. Maintenance had sealed it up. The doors were locked, lights off, no patients, no power. Just a dark, wet corridor nobody went near anymore. I wish I could leave it at that. It was around 2:30 a.m. when it started. I was making rounds when I saw the call light go off on the hallway panel. Unit D. I froze. Must be a glitch, I muttered. I walked back to the nurse's station, called the supervisor. Hey, Unit D's call light just went off. Silence. Then, that happens sometimes. Old wiring. Just ignore it. I tried, I really did. But then it happened again, 10 minutes later. This time the panel blinked room 12D. A room I'd never seen. I called maintenance. Room 12D, the guy said, half asleep. That section doesn't even have power anymore. There's no panel connected down there. It's been stripped out. So how the hell is the call light coming on? He just sighed and said, don't go down there. Seriously. But the problem with telling someone not to do something, it's all you think about. I waited until the others were on break, grabbed my flashlight and went to the end of the hall where the old doors to Unit D were chained shut. Only, they weren't. The padlock was hanging open, chains slack. I didn't even hear anyone unlock it. My heart dropped, but I told myself it was probably left open from a past inspection. I pushed the door open and stepped inside. The air changed immediately. Damp, heavy, and freezing cold. The beam from my flashlight caught water damage. Paint bubbling off the walls, ceiling tiles collapsed. But the weirdest part? The silence. Not the quiet kind, the dead kind. No hum of electricity, no creaking pipes, just stillness. I followed the hallway, each step sounding way too loud. My shoes squelched on the damp floor. I counted doors. 8, 9, 10. Then I saw it. Room 12-D. The door was half open. I didn't want to look. Every part of me screamed to turn around, but I moved forward, like something was pulling me. I stepped inside. The flashlight flickered. The room was empty, just a rusted bed frame, peeling wallpaper, and a smashed call light above the headboard. Completely dead. I backed up. Okay, nothing here. Time to leave. Then I heard it. Click. The call light above the bed lit up. Green. Bright. Alive. I gasped so hard I choked. The cord was swinging like it had just been yanked. That shouldn't be possible. That call system hadn't worked in decades. There wasn't even power in this part of the building. I turned and sprinted out the room, flashlight jerking wildly across the walls. I made it halfway down the hallway when I heard something behind me. Not footsteps, wheels, like a wheelchair dragging behind me. Slow, uneven. I didn't look back. I couldn't. I ran harder. I burst through the doors to Unit B and slammed them shut behind me. Locked the chain, pulled the padlock tight until my hands bled from the cold metal. Back at the station, I was shaking so bad I couldn't hold a pen. The other nurse saw me and asked what happened. I told her everything. She just stared. Then she said, 12D? That room belonged to a patient named Meredith. Used to pull the call light all night. Died in her sleep during a flood in 89. They never recovered her body. Water filled the ward so fast they think she drowned strapped to the bed. I didn't respond. I couldn't. The call light went off again. Unit D, room 12-D. No one was on that floor. Let me be clear. I've seen dementia patients talk to walls. I've heard death rattles. I've even watched people die with their eyes open. But I have never seen a dead wing of a hospital come alive like that. Story 7. I'm Alana, and I live in Chinle, Arizona. Been a CNA for 11 years, mostly in nursing homes on the reservation. If you've worked long enough in elder care, you know some patients get under your skin. But this one made my skin crawl. Her name was Mrs. DeWitt, white woman in her late 80s. No family. Transferred in from some hospital in Phoenix. She had that kind of voice that made you flinch before she even finished a word. Raspy, mean, too loud even when she whispered. Most residents here are Navajo, and there's a quiet way about them, even when they're dying. Mrs. DeWitt was the opposite. She'd scream for no reason, curse at anyone who got near her, spit in your face. She once slapped me hard across the mouth while I was trying to adjust her pillow. Just a bad soul. You couldn't convince me otherwise. I work the night shift, 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. Those hours feel different, especially out here in Chinle, where the silence feels thicker. I never minded the quiet until that night. It was mid-December, cold enough that the windows sweated from inside. Everything was routine. We had 5 staff that night. At about 12:30 a.m., I was doing rounds when Angie, another CNA, pulled me aside near the med cart. You hear what happened in B Wing? She whispered. No, I said, grabbing my chart. What? Mrs. Sam said she saw the devil. I actually laughed, thought she was joking. Come on. No, for real. She was shaking. Said he stood at the foot of her bed. Tall, black eyes, no skin. Mrs. Sam is this tiny, sweet old lady who still makes jewelry and sings when she walks. Not the type to make up stories. That shut me up. We kept it moving. An hour later, in a completely different unit, an aide named Jordan radioed for assistance. I went over. Resident in Unit C, Mr. Yazzie, had fallen out of bed. He was panicking, kept pointing at the corner of the room and yelling in Navajo, "Chi-ed." I froze. Chi-ed means ghost, or something worse. Evil spirit. Navajo don't even like to say the word. Jordan and I helped him up, calmed him down. He wouldn't stop trembling, kept repeating that it was standing there, watching him. At this point, I was getting uneasy. Two people in two different wings seeing something at almost the same time, and both terrified. We didn't connect the dots until 6 a.m. during report. Nurse Janie was finishing notes when she casually mentioned that Mrs. Gray Eyes from Unit A had also reported seeing something midnight sharp. She said it was the devil, Janie said, half laughing. He was crouched in her closet. Three residents, all within 10 minutes of each other. None of them interacted. Different units, different wings, and every single one said they saw the devil. Nobody said it out loud, but we all looked at each other, and we all thought the same thing. Mrs. DeWitt, she died that night, around midnight. We didn't even find her until around 2:45 a.m. Her door had been closed, and she wasn't a fall risk, so no one checked until her schedule changed. I was the one who found her. I walked in and immediately knew something was off. The room was ice cold, like walk-in freezer cold. I checked the thermostat set to 74, but my breath fogged in the air. She was lying in bed, eyes wide open, mouth open too, like she'd died mid-scream. Her body was stiff already, hands clenched into fists so tight the knuckles had gone white. But that wasn't the worst part. The sheets were soaked in something black, not blood, thicker, like oil, and it stank. I can't describe it, but it burned in the back of my throat, like chemicals and rot and something else I can't name. I've smelled death before. This was different, wrong. We called the nurse in, and when she pulled back the sheet, we saw scratches on Mrs. DeWitt's chest, deep, long claw marks, four of them. No blood, just open, dried, almost branded into her skin. None of us moved for a full minute, just stared. Then the call light lit up. Room 14, Mrs. Sam's room. I went, hard in my throat. She was sitting up, shaking, hands clutched over her blanket. When she saw me, her eyes got wider. "She said his name," she whispered. I stepped closer. "Who?" "The old woman," she said. "I heard her, in my dream. She said his name, and he came." "What name?" I asked. She just shook her head. "He followed her here. He was waiting." That's when I saw her window. The frost had gathered on the inside of the glass, thick enough to fog the view. But through it, I could see a shape, tall, still, standing just outside the window, not moving. I blinked. It was gone. Transferred out and started working private care the next day. I don't care what anyone says. That woman brought something with her, and the night she died, it came to collect. Story 8. I work night shift at a long-term care facility in Western Pennsylvania. It's not exactly a nursing home, more of a psych med transitional unit. We get everything from dementia patients to people detoxing or coming down from psychotic episodes. I'm not a nurse, just a tech. Been here for 3 years. Nights are usually quiet, but quiet doesn't always mean peaceful. Sometimes quiet means wrong. It was late October, around 2:30 in the morning. I was doing my usual rounds near the isolation rooms at the far end of the east hallway. We only use those rooms for high-risk psych patients. They're small, just a bed, a bolted-down chair, and a TV behind thick safety glass. The rooms are completely sealed with cameras in the corners and these tall, narrow hallway-facing windows. The blinds inside those windows are built into the glass and controlled by a small magnetic dial from our side. If someone inside hits the glass hard enough, the blinds will sometimes twitch open a bit on their own. Room 217 was occupied that night. The patient was a woman named Gloria, 60-something. She'd been brought in on an involuntary psych hold from the ER for self-harm and paranoid delusions. Her chart listed schizoaffective disorder, but she hadn't spoken a word since arriving. She'd just been sitting in the far corner of the room for hours, staring into nothing, didn't eat, didn't respond. Just rocked slowly and kept her hands tight on her knees. I walked by to do a routine check when I heard a solid thud. I stopped. It had come from her room.
I turned toward the window and the blinds had shifted just slightly, enough to create a thin gap. Her face was right there. She was inches from the glass, staring directly at me through the slit between the blinds. I couldn't see her clearly, just her outline in the dark. But something about it didn't look right. The silhouette looked darker than the rest of the room behind her, like there was a light source behind her that shouldn't have been there, and she was moving her lips. At first I thought she was just talking, but no. It was like she was singing. Her mouth was moving fast and smooth, like a kid chanting a rhyme. Only it wasn't any language I understood. High-pitched rhythmic gibberish. I stepped closer and said, "Gloria." But she didn't blink, didn't move, just kept mouthing that nonsense like she was under a trance. The blinds twitched again, just a tiny jolt. I looked down at the magnetic dial. It hadn't been touched. I reached out to close the gap fully, and as soon as I did, she slammed her hand against the glass. Bang! I jumped back. She was still there, pressed to the window, now laughing. But not a normal laugh. It was this dry, wheezing cackle, like she couldn't get enough air. Her head tilted back, and her lips started moving faster. Her voice went higher, like she was imitating a child's voice, and then distorting it into something not human. It kept getting louder, but the sound seemed to come from everywhere, like it wasn't just her voice, like it was inside my ears. Then the lights in her room flickered. I know how that sounds. Could be faulty wiring, right? But then her TV turned on. Instantly, full volume. No startup delay. No remote. Just static. Loud, blaring white noise that filled the hallway. I hadn't touched anything. The TV controls are at the nurse's station. There's no way she could have done it. And that's when she started screaming. Not at me. At the corner of the room. She spun around so fast it looked painful. Her arms flailed behind her like she was trying to claw something off her back. Her fingers went straight into her hair and started digging. I saw blood immediately. She was tearing at her scalp, leaving long red trails down her neck. I ran. Sprinting back to the station, I hit the intercom and shouted, "Room 217 is self-harming. Emergency assistance needed now." When we got back, me, the nurse, and security, it was dead silent. The TV was off. Lights were steady. Gloria was sitting calmly on her bed. Her hands were folded neatly in her lap. Her hair was soaked in blood, but she wasn't moving anymore, just staring at the opposite wall, completely blank. The floor around her had long scratch marks, like she'd been dragging her fingernails in repeating patterns. When we approached, she didn't flinch. We restrained her, gave her a sedative, and she never resisted, not once. Later that morning, I pulled up the camera footage. I needed to know if what I saw had really happened. The video showed her slamming the glass and screaming, "Sure." But the TV, it never turned on. In the recording, it stayed black the whole time. There was no static, no flickering lights. And most disturbing, there was no sound coming from her mouth at all. Her lips moved, but the audio picked up nothing. Just silence. She was transferred 2 days later to a state facility. I haven't seen her since. Story 9. I was working the night shift at a small, understaffed nursing home just outside Trenton, New Jersey. Place was quiet, too quiet sometimes. Old brick building from the 50s that smelled like bleach and sadness, with long halls that always echoed more than they should have. I was about 6 months into the job, 23 years old, fresh out of nursing school, and thought I'd seen everything already. I hadn't. This was back in 2018. I remember the date because it was the last shift I ever did a full overnight alone. November 12th. Cold as hell outside, frost on the windows. One of my patients, Mrs. Weiss, was actively dying. 98 years old. A Holocaust survivor. Sweet lady. Didn't talk much toward the end. Barely moved. She'd been completely unresponsive for 3 days. No reaction to light, sound, touch. Nothing. We were just keeping her comfortable at that point. Morphine under the tongue every hour. At around 2:55 a.m., I checked the time and grabbed her dose. I didn't turn on the overhead lights in her room. They were too harsh, and the hallway light coming in was enough. Just that soft yellow glow spilling in through the doorframe. I pushed the door open quietly and stepped inside. The second I crossed the threshold, something felt off. My chest tightened like someone had wrapped a belt around it. You know that feeling when someone's standing behind you and staring? That's what it felt like. Like I wasn't alone, but I was. Or at least, I should have been. I moved toward her bed. She was still, sunken into the mattress like a shadow. Mouth slightly open, skin pale, eyes closed. Her breathing was shallow, and I remember thinking she probably wouldn't last the night. I leaned down to give her the morphine, just like I had every hour before. Then her hands shot up, both of them actually. She grabbed my wrist, hard, with a strength I didn't think was physically possible in her condition. It was like being caught in a vice. Her nails dug into my skin. She pulled herself up, almost fully upright, and stared straight into my eyes. Let me be clear. This woman had not moved in 3 days. She hadn't spoken in a week. We'd been checking her vitals constantly because she was that close to the end. But now she was sitting up, clawing at me, and her eyes were wide open. Yellowish, glazed, but focused. Director, alive. Then she spoke, voice raspy, broken, but loud enough. "He has come for me." That's all she said, just that. And then, collapse. Like her bones turned to dust. Fell back onto the bed, arms flopped lifeless at her sides. Eyes rolled back. She was out again. No pulse change. No spasm. Nothing. It was like she hadn't moved at all. But I had red marks on my arm to prove it wasn't in my head. I stood there frozen. Couldn't move. Couldn't speak. I swear to God the room felt colder, and I thought I saw something. A shadow move across the ceiling. Just for a split second. But there was nothing there when I looked. I backed out of the room slowly, not taking my eyes off her. My hand was still shaking, the dropper still clutched in my fist. When I stepped into the hallway, it felt like I could finally breathe again. I didn't go back in that room, not for the rest of the shift. I sat at the nurse's station watching the monitor, waiting for her heartbeat to flatline. The morning nurse found me sitting there pale as a ghost, still holding the damn morphine bottle. I showed her my arm, the nail marks. She didn't say anything, just looked at me like she believed me more than she wanted to. I didn't tell anyone else. Story 10. I had taken some overtime, working the night shift in hospital security. A quiet evening, or so I thought. The surgery floor, always hushed during the late hours, was next to the maternity ward, which was usually alive with movement from visitors and staff. That night, though, even the maternity ward seemed eerily still. Just a handful of patients, few visitors. The halls felt heavier than usual, their silence amplified by the steady hum of fluorescent lights. Around 11 p.m., my office phone rang. A nurse from the surgery floor sounded uneasy. She'd just finished putting away supplies when she swore she heard shuffling noises and objects being moved, even though there shouldn't have been anyone else there. Her voice carried an edge of fear. "Can someone just check it out? I don't want to. I mean, I don't think anything's wrong, but it's weird." "Probably just kids wandering from the maternity ward," I said, trying to reassure her. "The proximity messes with traffic patterns sometimes. Happens more often than you'd think." She didn't seem convinced, but I promised to look into it. I figured she just wanted an excuse to leave, without dealing with whatever was bothering her. Since the surgery floor was quiet and deserted, I decided to start by reviewing the cameras, a feature we relied on more heavily during these low-traffic nights. The system could flag motion and highlight the time frame for easy review. If someone was wandering the halls, it wouldn't take long to spot them. The maternity ward cameras were mostly still, aside from a nurse's occasional rounds. But the surgery floor? It was a different story. At first, nothing seemed out of place. Empty hallways and occasional flash of light as equipment reflected the glow from overhead fixtures. Then, out of nowhere, the flagged motion started popping up. Small objects, bits of paper, a medical tray, appeared to slide out into the hallway as if they were being pushed by an unseen force. I rewound, watched.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message.
Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, couples therapy that works.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
Again, and my stomach twisted as the motion repeated. Items just moving. No one in sight. No logical source. It wasn't random either. The way they moved, almost deliberate, sent a chill crawling up my spine. At first I tried to rationalize it. Maybe air conditioning creating a subtle draft. But the trajectory of the objects didn't align with that idea. No breeze could push heavier objects like trays in the way I saw. I leaned closer to the screen, scrutinizing every corner for shadows, for even the faintest suggestion of someone off camera. Nothing. I checked the time frame again and again, hoping to catch something I'd missed. The flagged movements kept flashing, each one a small disturbance that built into a pattern I couldn't ignore. It was happening over and over, items gliding out into the hallway, pausing, and then stopping abruptly. After about 20 minutes of this, I leaned back in my chair, heart pounding. I didn't want to admit how unsettled I felt. It wasn't like I could call someone to back me up. Security's job was to handle these things, not escalate them without cause. But every instinct screamed at me to stay away from that floor. I did a quick walk around the maternity ward to confirm it was quiet, a nervous excuse to delay heading to the surgery floor itself. The nurses there were calm, going through their rounds without concern. Nothing was out of place. I could hear soft murmurs from patients' rooms, the occasional monitor beep. As I walked past the connecting hallway to the surgery area, though, the silence pressed harder against me. No footsteps, no voices, just the sound of my shoes echoing on the tile. Something about that stretch of hallway felt wrong. It wasn't just quiet, it was oppressive. My hands tightened around the flashlight clipped to my belt. I stopped at the doorway leading into the surgery floor, hesitating. The memory of those camera movements looped in my head. Every instinct told me not to go further, but I couldn't just leave it unchecked. So I stepped inside. The hallway stretched ahead, pale light casting long shadows. Everything was still. The objects that had moved on camera, paper scraps, trays, were exactly where they'd stopped. I scanned every corner as I walked, slow and deliberate, my footsteps unbearably loud in the quiet. Nothing moved. I tried to convince myself it was fine, that the camera glitches were just one of those weird, unexplainable quirks in technology. I approached the end of the hallway, stopping at the doorway to one of the empty surgery rooms. For a moment, I considered stepping inside. Then a loud metallic clang echoed from farther down the hall. I froze, my heart hammering in my chest. That sound wasn't on camera. This was live, right here, just feet away. I turned toward it, flashlight ready, and stepped slowly back toward the hall leading to maternity. But there was no one. No movement. just the lingering sound fading into silence. I couldn't stay. Whatever was happening didn't feel normal, didn't feel safe. I returned to the security office, my hands shaking, my pulse still racing. I rewound the camera footage one last time, hoping for clarity. Maybe I'd missed something. Maybe it wasn't as strange as it seemed, but the motions repeated, the flagged movements taunting me with their mystery. I avoided that floor for the rest of my shift. I told the nurse I couldn't find anything, though my voice betrayed the tension I couldn't shake. I worked security long enough to know when something felt truly wrong, and that night, that floor felt alive in a way it shouldn't have. Thanks for watching. Don't leave before leaving a like to this video. Also, hit the subscribe button to support my work. And as always, have a horrific nightmare, my dear.